standard of living probably went up considerably.
Okay, we got. We got a quorum, it's 4 o'clock, let's go ahead and get going. We need to approve the minutes of July the 17th, is there any additions, deletions, or alterations? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve?
Make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Alright, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Citizens reports, I don't think we have anyone. Would you like to have something to contribute to the?
I'm here to learn and learn.
Okay, alright, well, thanks for coming. Okay, informational items, we have one item, financial report. It's, are there any questions or comments about that item?
Jim is not here.
Okay, alright. Hearing none, let's move on to the consent agenda. Staff has reviewed and approved the consent item number two. Is there a motion to approve, or do you want to pull it for further discussion?
I move to approve the contract amendment for additional construction management services by Tesco in the amount of $52,387. It increases the not-to-exceed amount to $1,287,292.
Okay, there's a motion, is there a second? Any discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're moving right along here. Item number three, the regular agenda, that's recognizing the market value of one unit of Colorado Thompson Project water. Nathan, why don't you guide us through this?
You must have missed me already, because you had me back.
You moved just first.
Yes. My apologies.
That's okay.
And I apologize, I didn't get the title changed on the agenda. We actually, we're looking at a method to, oh, thank you. We're kind of looking for some guidance for calculating the average price for the CBT units. Last month, as you know, we came to you with a price adjustment, and we typically use the last 6 months' worth of data in which to look at the CBT prices, but as we discussed last time, and we've seen this graph many times, there's a pretty steep spike that kind of leveled off a little bit last, you know, a couple years ago, but then it's climbing again last 6 months through June. It doesn't show up there, but it's around 48, I think it's 48,000, and hopefully it printed out in your packet. Let's see if it is. Oh, 38, sorry. Last 6 months. If you average the last 6 months this year, it's 38,000. But we've recently seen even higher prices since then. I think the last actual documented price was 48,000. So this is another graph that you commonly see. The different months and the are in the different colors, and then the last 4 months that I used for this weighted average over here is for $39,814 per unit. The last resolution that we had in July was for $37,453, and that was taking the 6 months worth of data. So we can see that the price, you know, is relatively steady for a little while, but then it starts to spike. And so last month, the LUC brought to us suggesting, what about taking a shorter time period? So we looked at multiple different options. This chart is in your packet. If we looked at just this, the most recent date of the month, it was June, like I mentioned earlier, we have an average weighted price of 48,000. So that sounds like, wow, let's use that. The challenge with that is there was only two units sold and only one transaction for those two units. That if you ever follow Northern Water's website or if you're on their email list, it was for a bid that went to auction. I've actually recently heard that there's another bid that may be transpiring here soon. Larry was told last night about 60 units that may be going up for bid. I don't know for sure. Nonetheless, so it's very few transactions to determine our price for cash in lieu. If we took 2 months, that's what this 2 months, the two represents, then there was only a total of four transactions, but only 11 units. Again, it's a very small number to be basing our cash in lieu off of, and the cash in lieu price at that point, not the cash in lieu, sorry, this average CBT price would be $43,000, with the cash in lieu translating to about $45,000. So as a staff and as people that like math and numbers, we see that these in the green are probably a little bit more where we get some consistency. We see more transaction as well as number of units sold. But ultimately, we want the LUC to make that final determination of what direction you would like us to do going forward. The 6 month, again, is very similar to what we've been doing, and it only increased by 1.5% using the last 6 months of data. So we wouldn't technically be coming back to you, but with these two green ones, this is the increase that you would see to the current cash in lieu price. So with that, you have any questions?
Why don't you go back to the other one so we can leave the numbers up. So
yep, absolutely.
So in reading the master plan, and now I can't find what I wrote it at, I thought I read in there, which I didn't know, that if we take a cash in lieu price in 2010, and it sits there with so many acre feet, but when they come in 2018 do the development, we then adjust the acre feet that they bought by the ratio of the original CIL price compared to the current CIL. But is that correct, or am I daydreaming?
Ask your question one more time.
I thought I read in this 30-year master plan, and I can't find but that if someone came in with $100,000 and the price was $30,000, so we, whatever the division is, we give them that many water shares in the water bank, but they don't bring in their development plan instigate it for 8 years, and it's jumped to $40,000, so we reduce the acre fee proportionally there.
No, that's not quite right. If you find where that is, and maybe we can either clarify it.
I'm skipping through the 260 pages right now.
Well, we just flood you with all this information. So if, first of all, we don't allow somebody to put cash into the water bank anymore. That stopped in 2006. And so if they have cash credit within the water bank, it stays as an acre foot value. So somebody who bought in, let's say 20 years ago, they put cash credit into the water bank and they bought 10 acre feet, it's still worth 10 acre feet today. The ones that do change are the native shares and then the CBT shares within the water bank. Those change according to the municipal code of what we allow for each of those shares.
Okay.
Did that answer your question in a roundabout?
Yeah, I'm gonna work.
Yeah, if you find it, please point it out. We've gone to this document many times, but, you know.
So I do have another question, because I think that definitely the data information ought to be shortened, because we're obviously in a climbing price. And I remember that one developer woman back asked me, who is saying, well, most of the towns are running out of water now, so you need to have water available and hold the price. But back in the steel business, when somebody told me that, we're not charging enough for our product.
Right.
Would we consider doing the last 100 transactions or 50 transactions as opposed to a monthly basis?
And that's something that, you know, a direction that we could definitely take. So
probably going units sold versus
than the transactions. That way you'd get the gross number of units rather than just simple transactions. That would shift it if there was a 100 unit block or something. That might be a good way to do it.
So I think suggestions like that are very valid. Definitely something to consider. Other questions?
So if some, a developer comes in, rather than providing shares of water, they provide cash in the two questions I have. Do we then have to turn around, and do we turn around them and go buy the water ourselves?
Not typically. Right now, we take the cash in lieu that we get, and that goes into basically our savings account that we will eventually pay for Chimney Hollow, is what we do. Now, there's always the option, well, we'll talk about that more later as well, but, you know, there was always the potential of buying CBT if we had to, but we had plenty of that, and yet we had this project in the future, so.
And then the second question maybe can be moved, but do you envision a time where we will want to say we're not going to accept cash in lieu, we want water rights?
I think there's always that possibility. There's many towns in the surrounding area that are in that kind of situation. I don't see that in the near future. But water, physical water, is more valuable sometimes than cash. If we don't have a project in which to put cash towards, we really legitimately can't take that cash at that point. And that's where we may go
to that.
So
if we didn't have a Chimney Hollow,
correct,
it would be of no use to us to take cash from the water.
Right, exactly. That's the situation.
You have some other projects that we're doing.
Yeah.
For example, the Great West Reservoir, downstream augmentation reservoir. There are some other projects, but in theory, his point is exactly right.
Yeah.
If we don't have something physical to apply those funds to, then we can't take the money.
I anticipate it'll be a ways in the future, but, you know, hard to see.
Thank you for allowing me to deviate.
No, that's a good question.
So just out of curiosity, though, how many cash in lieu transactions are transpiring with the city on a monthly basis, quarterly basis?
That's a good question. Like an average, since I've been here, I have seen, and this is kind of off the top of my head, I've seen over $5 million worth of cash in lieu transactions. And now there's some big blocks in there where they brought in $1 million check, but a lot of little ones as well.
And what's that time span for you then?
I've been here just a little over a year and a half.
Oh, wow. Okay, so lots of transactions.
Yeah, it's been a very busy market since I've gotten here. They don't want to keep me still at all. It's a good thing.
That's very much related to the economic conditions, because after the recession in 2008, there weren't any for quite a while.
I was hoping Larry would say it's because I'm popular, but... Any other questions?
I have one other dumb question.
Yeah.
So I'm confused with someone also on this who said the Windy Gap project, if it ever happens, I mean the Chimney Hollow project, this was optimistic, but anyway, $8,000 or $9,000 per acre foot for the cost of the storage.
Oh, right.
And so if someone comes in and gives cash in lieu, that's based solely on CBT, or will we consider that they could get Windy Gap water, with somehow we come up with the price for that for both the cost of the Windy Gap and the storage cost?
Well, you said it was a dumb question, but it's not at all. That's actually an excellent question. And that's something that we, as the LUC and as a staff, we will continually reevaluate whether it's more legitimate to look at purchasing or adding to the Windy Gap, and not buying more Windy Gap units, but paying for the storage that we already have.
If we charge them that $9,000, say the number per acre foot for that, that's in perpetuity as long as those hold those rights, and then it passes to another buyer if they want to give that up?
Are you talking about like if they buy it and they put it on a property, or if they were to put it in the water?
Or put it on property, just say, well, we don't allow them to sell it to anyone else, right?
Yeah, so if somebody pays cash in lieu for a property, it goes to that property and stays on that property, so yes. And the other thing to kind of note, and Larry might talk about this, I don't know if he'll cover this specifically, but when we mentioned that $8,000, that is unfirmed. And so when we start to evaluate for cash in lieu, we will likely look at something that's firmed rather than unfirmed. And so firmed, I think you have to do a multiplier of like, what, 2.6 or so?
2.6.
Yeah, and so it goes up quite a bit. And so our cash in lieu, it's still a lot less than this, but that's something, again, to revisit. Yeah.
And Derek Turner, assistant city attorney, and just to introduce, or just to inject the municipal code provision that provides, you know, defines cash in lieu, because I think that's what you were hinting at. And just to preview, I think, the raw water master plan discussions for the next couple months, the code defines the cash in lieu to be equal to the market price of one CBT unit, recognized by resolution. And, you know, this item is talking about how do you think, you know, you should recognize that market price of CBT unit. The bigger question that you were suggesting is, should that be the cash in lieu definition? And that is something that comes, I think, as part of, or considering whether that should be the cash in lieu definition, which is, you know, should we tie it to the CBT unit, is part of the recommendations of the Raw Water Master Plan. And it's a bigger discussion to as to the set of ordinances that would come out of, you know, this forward-looking master plan on how should this water utility look forward for the next 30 years. So I think that's a section in that document, but that's, you know, that any ordinances that would change that would come after, you know, a couple of meetings here before you, recommendations to city council, review approval of the plan by city council, review and approval of a set of ordinances on two readings to put into the code any kind of policy changes that you're recommending here. So
yeah, that's a good point, because what we're looking at here is still all within LUC's purview, but the moment that we start to look at some other way besides using CBT to calculate cash in lieu, it's something that has to go through a lot more arduous task of changing the ordinances. So yeah.
Well, I mean, if there's another source of water that's basically equal to CBT water, it ought to be the same price. Is that right or wrong in
the water market?
Is there anything close to the same as CBT?
It's considered a uniform kind of a base,
yeah,
volume base unit, because everybody understands where it is, what its nature is, what its color is.
Right. So when we compare that to ditch buying shares on ditch, it's not really even close to the same good.
That's right.
Right. It's really difficult to compare them, just because, you know, for example, ditches don't have storage, or if they do, it's limited, and then they have to be changed in water core. There's many multiple steps, you know, involved, and so it's definitely difficult to evaluate the two and compare. Larry, you're going to say something?
Well, I was just going to add to your question there. The CBT price is kind of the universally recognized market up here, and the ditches sometimes will follow that price. Just right now is a good example of what can happen. There's a lot of pressure on a little bit south of us, Mead, and some of the communities down there on CBT, and frankly, the CBT sources are becoming very limited. And so some of that demand is spilling over into native ditches. And we're seeing the home supply ditch, which originates in our river here, with share prices just going up and up and up, higher than they've ever been. And they're following that CBT price. They don't match it, but they're trailing it. On the other hand, on the other side of the river, up north, we have ditches that have prices that are you know, they're higher than they were, but they're not taking that great climb like we're seeing. So it varies a lot from ditch to ditch, depending on the conditions and what the demands are.
Other questions?
Okay, I think that you're looking for some direction from us on,
yes,
if we want to continue with what we've got or change the
length of period or a number of transactions.
Yeah.
What does anybody have any recommendations or corrections?
I think, as I remember in our last meeting, we decided to review this frequently, but I think we talked about, can't remember whether it was monthly or bi-monthly or whatever, but I think based on the limited number of transactions, it's kind of hard to jump very much at this point in time. But I'd like to see some more data in the future, you know, maybe another month or so. That would be my input.
What if we do this then, Gene? I like the idea. What we're trying to do is normalize the number, and so that the one-offs don't skew the price. Let's do this, and I think we can do this pretty easily for next month. Then calculate it like we've got it here, do it by transactions, and then by the units sold, and see what those numbers work out to be.
Sure. Basically, what you have here, or something.
But with number, yeah, basically. But at a if we calculated it based on, say, 100, the last 100.
Oh, I see.
Units
what you're
sold,
yeah.
Or the last 25 or so transactions, okay. That kind of a
yeah.
thing.
Sure.
And
yeah.
see how that works it out. Because again, what we're looking for, we know it's not a real number, because the only thing that determines the real number is the market. It's the last one. What we're trying to do is make it equitable and normalize it as much as possible. So I think those are good ways to try to do that. And it then you're dealing more in real transactions rather than a simple time where there may be one or none over the last 6 months. So we'll take a look at that.
Okay.
Now, are these transactions here only specific to what has happened in Loveland, or do we have kind of a broader picture of what's going on everywhere?
Yeah, so these are transactions throughout the CBT system.
Okay.
So these are ones that we get a report called Straticon, and they take in all data. A lot of it doesn't even have actual dollar numbers with it. They're traded for taps or something of that nature. So, yeah.
The last 100 are probably going to be about 43,000.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You regress to the mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
You regress to the mean.
I mean, you just got a market that's hot and probably not going to turn. And if it turns, you'll see that really fast with the 100 also. Mm-hmm.
How do other cities do it?
How do they base their cash in lieu?
Yeah.
So it varies a lot. I think Little Thompson, they basically are basing it somewhat on.
Yeah. As far as I know, the methodologies would all be some form of what we do here. It might be by their councils, but the staff is usually watching the market, the boards. Oftentimes can provide input, but there's a meeting of minds somewhere on what that price ought to be, and so they'll be set similar to what we're doing.
And it's mostly a market-based determination,
yes.
So I understand.
So has it ever gone down, or does it always go up?
No.
Remember several months back we had that visit from McQuinney, and he was very concerned about the cash and loot price and how it was going up. And
sure.
Has it ever gone down?
It has. Both the cash and loot and the CBT prices have gone down when we had the recession, essentially.
Yeah.
You can see right around. It actually looked like it started to decline
before
the recession, and then it dropped even more so.
Because if we're not using this to purchase water now, which it sounds like we're not, it goes into a bank to pay for Windy Gap.
Yeah.
So then I'm wondering why we're, I'm just wondering how it all balances out and why we're paying for something that's in, I guess what I'm getting at is I think it should be over a long period of time, because if we're doing current market and we're reacting for something that we've already paid for or that we're paying for in the future, then I think it needs to balance itself out.
Oh, I see. Rather
try to get rid of these big peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's.
I think that's what hopefully what the normalization would do.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But the other argument is, on the other side, is that if you sell your, if you cash in and they come in, so you use $30,000 because that's the 5-year average, will this be subsidizing water?
Right.
And the market's telling you that we're running out of water, And to tell a taxpayer that we're allowing developers to buy water for $30,000 would be a hard sell. Worse than a hard sell from some of my neighbors.
I think what we've seen in the past was that we're pretty competitive with other cities around. You might take a look at that and compare it with Fort Collins and Longmont and Estes.
I'd just like to append a comment on what you just said, Gary. I think we are. The biggest difference, though, between what Loveland is charging and other entities is that our credit for CBT is different from other entities. And,
so it's not apples to apples.
Right. We're still allowing 1 acre foot of credit per CBT unit because in our modeling, that's the effect it's having on our firm yield. A few years ago, the new modeling that we have is not supporting that, and so we may be changing that. There's a recommendation here. Most people use a value of 0.7 acre foot per unit, and you divide 0.7 into 39,330, which is our current number, and you've got a much larger number. And there are other entities with numbers that are up in that range.
Yeah.
Didn't we say in this, so we're going to go to 0.9?
0.9 would reflect what the effect seems to be in our modeling on our firm yield. So we'll come to that point, you know, in the next item, but it's one of the discussion items is we're recommending that it be reduced to at least 0.9.
And why do we add the 5% bump?
5% is an administrative charge for handling the water.
Okay. Got to pay Larry's salary. Hey, Larry Sauer.
I work for free myself. I love this.
All right. Any other questions? I think
we'll bring the some stuff back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Joe, you wanted to talk about the work.
If you look in front of you, we trying to get to electronic as much as possible, and I think we've done a pretty good job with that with everybody, but. We knew that the raw water master plan was a pretty weighty document. So you'll see that in front of you as a print document that is a parting gift from us that you can take home. We have got an awful lot of material to download to y'all today. So what I'm asking is that Larry's going to do the presentation. Let's take a look at the presentation, try not to get down any rabbit holes or things like that, and then this gives you a full month to go over this, to go over what he said today. We're not going to be asking for any recommendations. We're not going to be asking for any guidance until next month after you've had a chance to digest this rather, and it is, it's a long report. It's a very good report. I've read it. It has been massaged by I was going to say something, but I just changed my mind on that. It has really been edited, and I think it's a great document. We're at the end of it, though. We're going to be coming back to you to look for some recommendations. So we'd like to get the download done today, and then next month is when we'll ask for recommendations on. And they're at the; those are included. Those questions are included at the end of this document. So,
okay,
it's going to be
a hard copy.
What's that? Yeah.
Thanks for the hard copy.
Yeah. I have a hard time. I try to read, if I can, it's a memo, 2 or 3 pages. I can knock it off on this. But if it's something like that, I simply, my head doesn't work that way. I have to read it in print copy. So.
Especially if the next time you tell us before we, because
you printed it. Huh?
I tried that.
We'll try to communicate that better. I know we got it out a little late, but that's we'll try to do that better.
So for clarification, is this a draft?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
It doesn't say that anywhere on it, but that is.
Oh, this
we wanted to save a little bit of ink for that water. But yes, absolutely it is.
Okay. It's a draft, and you'll eventually want to toss it when we get down to the final. So.
Let's save the final.
Yeah, we probably should have watermarked it. I didn't even think of it at the time. So.
Well, I feel better about going to bed last night at 10:30 instead of staying up to read it.
You'd have still been reading. Well, I appreciate your time today.
And we really do want to get this information out, want you to think about it. If you have questions as we go, please ask them, you know, about what we're doing and how we reached certain points. We have in today's presentation what I'm calling discussion points, but those are based on essentially what I think will become a set of recommendations that would go forward after your approval as a recommendation to City Council for them to be looking at. So these discussion points, each of them is a potential recommendation that will come out of that. Now, you've seen the technical heart of this two times previously. I didn't write the dates down, but earlier this year, we've had presentations from Spronk Water Engineers showing the modeling, showing how this works, how it all comes together. And so that, you know, I hope made pretty good sense to you. And we want you to feel comfortable with what we've done and with the numbers that are being generated. And it's from that, then, that we take, collectively, we being staff and the LUC members and ultimately council, then we take that technical information and we bring it into our world and look at how we want to handle these issues of raw water. And just the few minutes of conversation here, I think, illustrate very clearly that this is something that's getting more and more difficult. There's more and more demand. The supply is not increasing. And so we all have to keep that in mind as we look at what's happening. So I'll start through these slides. There are, I forget, not too many, a dozen or so something. And we'll kind of, you know, I'll explain what's there. And if you have any questions, let's just take care of those as we go. But we'd like to just get through to the end and have you understanding at least what our thinking has been getting to these points. So we'll start right here with a discussion on the raw water master plan. And here we go.
What are the pictures, since I'm familiar?
Okay, this is a picture of the Obermeyer spillway looking downstream at what's referred to as Big Dam or the Home Supply Dam. The city's water treatment plant is right over here. The dam belongs to the Home Supply Company, but we've used it under contract with them since, at least 1895, and I think it was actually 1887, probably without a contract, up until 1895. So that's looking downstream. This is Chastain Grove, if you're familiar with that. Highway 34 is about a mile down to the south there. This is where the Hanson Feeder Canal comes out from under Green Ridge. So this is above Green Ridge Glade Reservoir. If you're going up Highway 34 underneath the big siphon, you drive by the dam store beneath that big pipe right at the mouth of the canyon. That siphon takes water back up into a canal that flows north about a mile, and then it goes through another siphon under a canyon to the east into the other end of this tunnel. This, I think, is roughly 400 feet long and comes out right here. So there's a whole series of siphons and tunnels and canals that are ultimately taking water up to Horse Tooth Reservoir. So this is flowing through the valley right above Green Ridge Glade Reservoir. And this is down in the basement of the water treatment plant. It's where the raw water is coming into the plant. It comes in from two different directions and we mix it together, those two directions being from the reservoir and from the river. And they come together then in the basement plant in this general area right here where these pipes are. The first thing that we look at is the basis for our plan. Every community has to decide what their level of risk will be. And Loveland's level of risk was first articulated, at least the first that I know of, back in about 1985. And at that time, our city council gave the staff guidance that they wanted a supply of water that would meet uncurtailed uses up to an event described as a 1 in 100 year drought or 100 year drought, so 1% chance in any year of that drought occurring. And that guidance has been renewed with the 2005 Raw Water Master Plan, and again in 2012 with an update on the Raw Water Master Plan.
And that's the guidance that this is based on here. If that's something that changes, then we need to make some changes in how we model and how we approach that. But this has still been the guidance that we're operating under at this time. What that means, though, is conservation itself is not to be used, in other words, active, overt conservation is not to be used as a way of meeting that supply up to that 100-year drought. It's meant to be what happens after a 100-year drought, in a 500-year drought, that kind of thing. So, because those do exist. They're out there, and you need some resiliency in your system. So, we do, though, I should mention right here, we have seen over 20 years or so a declining amount of use on a gallons per capita day among our citizens, and it's been fairly significant. And those lower numbers are the ones we're projecting out into the future. So conservation has essentially become a part of this just because that's what the real uses have become. So we've taken those, worked them into our projections. So we're not ignoring the fact that things change over time. So here's the yield analysis we talked about, and it's really intended to be a tool. It's actually one of the appendices in the Raw Water Master Plan that's before you. I think it's the second appendix, if I remember right. But it's there. The information that was provided to us is in there in draft form. That's not entirely final yet either. We're waiting on the very final version of that and should have it by next month. But we were given direction on the first version of this, that this would be a tool to use in developing the city's raw water master plan. So as we've updated, that direction has been applied on an ongoing basis. And we're using that as the basis for the decisions that we'll be making today. Not today, but the discussion we'll be having today.
I don't know if this is taking us into the weeds or just bringing this up too soon, but it's the third bullet, 2002 drought conditions modeled as a 100-year drought. Wasn't, in fact, the 2002 drought year like a 500-year?
Yeah.
One in 500 year
it,
event?
It actually wasn't. There's some information in the Spronk report that goes into that, and it was quite close. There's a graph in there that shows the various severities of droughts. On a curve, and if you look at that 2002 drought, there are other droughts named by year on that, but that 2002 drought comes and hits that curve right about at a 100-year drought
okay.
event. So, yeah. That's a very good question because it's you wonder, but there is, I think the analysis went back to it was in the 1500s, 1574.
Using tree ring data.
Right.
Sorry.
Using tree ring data.
Right. So there was a fairly lengthy period of time that was used to analyze that. That's where that came from. One of the things that this group has done each time we've looked at this plan is determined what should be the target planning horizon for the city. And this is a dynamic situation as you go through time, your demands can decrease or increase. I mentioned a moment ago, they seem to be decreasing. And your supplies can change. Certainly the competition for your supplies can change. And so that's why we need to update this whole plan every few years and make sure that our projections, because we're projecting 40 years out in the future, making sure that they're as accurate as we can get them before we make that projection, knowing that they are not going to be entirely accurate out there. So it's a process of renewing and then making those projections and renewing those projections over time. But one of the things that we've done here is looked at that planning horizon. And there are actually three different methods that we use looking here, or three different analyses that we went through. They're fairly simple, but I think they can give us some guidance. One of the things here is scenario A and scenario B, out of the three scenarios, looked at the highest year, highest year of water use that the city had had over the last 10 years. Almost 15,000 acre feet of water back in 2012. It was a dry year and we haven't used that much water again. Our average is more than, I think, about 1,000 feet, acre feet lower than that. But then we say, okay, how are we going to project that? We have growth scenarios that come from our planners downtown, and we're looking at 1.5% to 2% growth out into the future. And so how do we apply that growth? Well, in this case, the beginning year of that growth was to go to the highest year, which was 2012, and then you start right there with the projections and see where that takes you. That's the highest. It ends up giving you the highest projected demand in the future. Or you can take that highest year, and in scenario B, we just bring it over to the most recent year that we have data for, 2018, and say we'll just project it basically from the current time and project that forward. And you get another number, but the projection out at the end is lower. On scenario C, we just simply looked at what was the five-year average of the last 5 years for which we have data, and then start at that number. And in each case, we're projecting the same rate of growth on top of that. And where do those numbers take you? Here's the population number that we're looking at in 2018. And we're taking this out to 2060. I think there's a graph. Here we go. Here are the three scenarios that are projected. Scenario A starts higher, stays higher. But if you go out to 2060, we would be able to meet a demand here in Loveland of 30,239 acre feet. Now, I need to say, this assumes that we get Jimmy Hollow built and online, and that we finish downstream at Great Western Reservoir and make sure that that's developed so that it's online. But those are the two critical components. Gene?
All right, at the top at 30,000, what's the dotted red line, the horizontal line there again?
Okay, this right here?
Yeah.
That's 30,000 acre feet, which has been our planning goal through the last two versions of this document. And might as well say it here, we're recommending we continue using that goal. We've grown a lot, but our use per capita has gone down. And so it still makes sense, we think, to think about that as a planning goal out into the future. Scenario B, where we take that same high year and then start last year and project it on out into the future, is this green line. And at the year 2060, our demand would be, these are demand numbers, our demand would be 27,200. It's still under that 30,000 planning horizon. And scenario C, where we took the average of the last 5 years and then projected it from 2018, is the lowest number. 25,000 acre feet of demand would be projected using that number. This dotted line here is the average of those three, 27,000. So what we're saying is, if you average those out and you project all of this out to 2060 based on the assumptions that are made going into this, we will still have not quite hit that 30,000 acre foot number. You could project this on out and it looks like it would go several more years out there before you get to a point where you've met your supply. This being the supply line, and here's the Lady Gap Firming Project and the Great Western Reservoir. We're assuming that those will both be online and usable within 10 years. And that's why we've shown that here. Basically, 2031 is, we think those will be there. They'll be filled and online. And so we've just taken that supply and run that out into the future there. So what we're recommending at this point, and then of course you can be thinking about for any kind of recommendations or discussion, is that this is a pretty good number. There are things that could happen, such as exchanges in the river being used heavily by other people, that are senior to our exchanges, but they haven't been used heavily yet. But if people started doing that, it would pull this red line down a little bit. If less and less CBT is delivered down the Big Thompson River, because more and more of it's owned by cities in other places or even ourselves, that can make a difference on our ability to exchange water back up the river. So there are a lot of things that could happen. We think of them as kind of the worst case scenarios in a way, but we did model them, and they could affect this result out here in some cases 2,000 or 3,000 acre feet. So it seems like that 30,000 acre foot planning horizon makes sense. And I'll just leave it at that. If you have any questions or comments about that, I'd be happy to entertain that or any descriptions on the chart.
This is a great chart. It's a great chart. I like it.
It should give an awful lot of people comfort.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very nice chart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy to read.
I like it. And these are real projections as far as growth. Now, that doesn't mean that won't change, but everything that we've heard from the state demographer on down to our local people seem to indicate that somewhere in the 1.5 to 2% range is about where we'll probably be for the foreseeable future. But that's one of those things that would be updated in another 5 or 10 years, or you know, on another cycle of updating this plan. If we find that that's different, this is where you would adjust it, right here.
You know, this reminds me of a plus or minus scenario. What's your worst case and what's your best case? And you can kind of fit your decisions based on that.
Mm-hmm. So try to stay somewhere near the middle, if it makes sense to do that.
Independent of population, are there any other influences that can move that line around? Like, let's just say a prolonged recession, perhaps. Does the economy move those?
Yes. A prolonged recession could pull us down. You know, not as many people move here. Another thing that could happen, though, is what if another Anheuser-Busch decided to locate in Loveland? We could have a pretty good-sized spike up here. And that would shorten our time out there. I mean, that would affect our planning. We would need to be able to compensate for that in our planning. So it could go either way, it just depending on things that at this point we can't really foresee.
Interesting.
Okay, any other questions on this one? Okay. Our policy for accepting raw water payments. You've probably heard us refer to the 50% rule. It's something that we've talked about as a group here. And it's something that we feel helps strengthen the city's water supply portfolio. What we're saying is that for every water rights transaction, every time we send out a letter, Nathan sends letters out to developers saying, for this development, the calculation shows that you owe 37 acre feet of water, then what this rule says is that half of that must be paid with CBT water, if they can find it, or cash in lieu, or there are cash credits that are in the water bank. Nathan mentioned we haven't accepted cash credits since 2006, but there are still a fair number of cash credits in the water bank where we allow people to come in and buy an acre foot of credit. And those can be bought and sold. The water bank actually is fairly active with people buying credit from each other. That seems to be where a lot of the payments end up being made, is credit. There's about 4,000 acre feet of credit in the water bank that is not yet dedicated to development. And it can be bought and sold. And that's what happens. But we might want to think about an exception for small transactions. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for 1 acre foot is what you would pay for a 3/4 inch commercial tap. You could talk about 4 acre feet, the amount for a 1 inch commercial tap. Is there a point at which you want to put kind of a de minimis on this requirement? But CBT, cash credit, or cash in lieu need to make up, and this is current, 50% of any of those cash payments, or I mean, any of those payments that are made to meet water rights requirements. So,
do cash credits go in a specific bucket and not the general fund, so to speak? are cash credits used in the future?
Cash credits are described as acre feet. Everything that we do comes down to acre feet because dollars fluctuate more than the acre feet do. And so we try to, you know, we ultimately convert everything into acre feet. So those cash credits were paid into the water bank. People were saying, if you'll give me 1 acre foot of credit, I'll pay X amount, whatever it was at the time. And that cash was then taken, goes into the raw water fund, which pays for, at that time, we were paying for Green Ridge Glade, Chimney Hollow, that type of thing. Taking cash credits like that, though, is something that you must have a project for, something very specific. And so that practice was stopped. It could be done again if we needed to for some reason, but it was stopped then. But there are a lot of those cash credits there. And they remain 1 acre foot of credit, regardless of what happens to the market or anything. Then there's no storage fee on them. They're just there.
There's a difference between a cash credit and a cash in lieu. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what you're asking.
The cash in lieu is what's paid in the moment that something is due. If someone comes in and wants to pay cash instead of give us water, it's paid at that time, and it's paid at whatever rate's current at that time.
How do you determine they have a valid project?
How do we determine
the validity of a project?
Well, a project can be any number of things. It can be buying CBT. It can be building a reservoir like we did at Green Ridge Glade. It can be building or acquiring or developing downstream storage like we're doing.
That's not what I meant. When they come in to do cash in lieu, how do you determine they have a project and that you allow them to do cash in lieu?
Okay. They have to come to us with some sort of subdivision application or something. And on residential areas, at the time the final plat is pending, that's when we do the calculation for water rights and then tell the developer, okay, before this can be approved, you need to take care of this need for X acre feet of water. If it's a commercial development, it can be developed and platted without being paid. And it's at the building permit time because we don't know what size taps will be needed on each lot, and that requirement is based on the tap size. So, it's one of those types of events that occurs.
They got to go through a review process, not only with us, but every department.
So it's citywide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So our thought is that this is helpful. It helps balance the city's water portfolio. It's especially nice when we can get CBT water. And right now we have a little over half of our supply from the East Slope and the rest from the West Slope. It's an ideal situation for Loveland because if one basin's dry, the other one may be dry but not as dry. You can balance things out a little bit that way. And this just helps take care of some of that.
Have you been getting a lot of cash in lieu or cash credits because of construction requirements and things recently?
Yeah, Nathan could probably answer that better. He's the man at the door. So
we right now, because of the 50% rule, there's quite a few people within the water bank that have native credits. So what I see most often is people buy 50% of their water rights requirement with the native credits through the water bank, and then the cash in lieu is paid for the other 50% because there's only two people selling cash credits currently in the water bank. Even though we have lots, there's only two people that are willing to sell it, if that makes sense. Is that the question you had? Is how many transactions are we seeing?
I just wondered if you had a lot of income coming in based on cash in lieu or cash credits.
Yeah, we are. Cash in lieu quite a bit. I think I've seen over $5 million since I've been here about a year and a half.
So
just this year alone, we've taken $3.4 million in cash in lieu, and we'd only project a couple hundred thousand. So it's excessively higher than we expected.
That's going to help our Chimney Hollow.
Yeah, we'll need that when we start paying for Chimney Hollow.
Yeah.
That's where it cash is. it turned into something real, something physical for us. Another thing, we talked about it briefly, but the CBT credit is something that our staff is recommending be changed. And at least we need to go down to this number here to match our realities.
So clear one thing up, why am I confused? I thought on CBT we used 0.7 acre feet for firm mule and dry mules.
Many people do. Loveland has not, and it's because our own modeling was showing that in the drought year, when we were really using all of our supply and stretching our system, we were getting a full acre foot of credit for CBT water. It's true that average yield with CBT is lower than that. It's 0.7 acre feet of water, roughly, not one. But it's inversely available to the native water supply.